Hi, I'm Alicia.
And I'm Robin, and you're listening to Bowel Moments,
the podcast sharing real talk about the realities of IBD.
Served on the rocks.
This week, we talked to Kim S. Bell. Kim is a doctor of pharmacy whose son was diagnosed with Crohn's disease when he was only 13 years old. After consulting with doctors and doing some research, her son decided to start exclusive enteral nutrition to try to get his Crohn's disease under control. We talked to her about how her and her family supported him while he was doing this and what that was like for him to be on such a specific diet. And we talked to her about how she and her husband, Anthony, who's a physician, started the nonprofit organization Nutritional Therapy for Inflammatory Bowel Disease back in 2019. We talked to him about all of the great resources that Nutritional Therapy for IBD provides to patients as well as to professionals. And we talked to her about the importance of nutritional therapy and all of the options for people living with inflammatory bowel disease. We had such a great conversation with Kim. We know you're going to love her and all of the great information provided by Nutritional Therapy for IBD. Cheers.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bowel Moments. This is Robin.
Hey guys, this is Alicia, and we are absolutely delighted to be joined by Kim Bell. Kim, welcome to the show. We are so excited to talk to you.
Well, thank you, Alicia, and thank you, Robin, for having me here on your show tonight. It's truly an honor to be part of the Bowel Moments podcast. I've been looking forward to it, and I really appreciate it. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you all tonight.
Fantastic. Well, we are very excited for people to get to know you, but our first very unprofessional question for you, Kim, is what are you drinking?
Well, I am actually drinking a hot tea. One of my favorite drinks also is I enjoy a good glass of red wine. But most nights like tonight, I enjoy a nice warm glass of tea. And this one in particular is called Rooted. And my son introduced it to me around Christmas time. And I thought it's become one of my favorites. It's made with root extracts and ashwagandha. So I thought in honor of him and part of the show, I thought I would I'd enjoy it tonight.
Well, and ashwagandha is good for sleeping and like stress relief. And so that sounds like it could be a really good one to add to the rotation. Robin, what about you?
Story time. I don't know why I'm drinking this. I've been on the struggle bus lately, been having some heating pads on my abdomen. And actually now I do know. I'm tired of electrolytes. So I'm drinking some Bloody Mary mix, some tomato juice with like some salt and some pickle juice in it, like to get the sodium with some flavor and not like that electrolyte drink mix stuff. So I have water and I have tomato juice with like, I guess a doctored tomato juice.
That's good. Well, I am also drinking tea tonight. There's a tea that I love. It's the Good Earth Company that does it. And it is like a cinnamon tea. And so it's a little bit naturally sweet because of the things they put in it. So I don't have to add any like honey or anything to it, but it's really tasty and a little spicy, which, also drinking tea. Well, Kim, again, so excited to hear your story and have you on the show. Next question for you is tell us your IBD story. What brought you into our community?
Well, you know, I didn't really know IBD, Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis or much about it until my son was diagnosed with Crohn's disease nearly 11 years ago. So that would be back in 2013. And our story begins, I think, a lot like other people, that where it takes a while for the diagnosis to happen. And it was just a lot of fatigue he was experiencing, you know, night sweats and fever even, and thought it was an infection for a long period of time. And then ultimately, when it was thought that he might have Crohn's disease, my husband and I really began researching a great deal to optimize his care. And that's because we're both healthcare professionals. I'm a pharmacist is my training, a doctor of pharmacy, and my husband's a physician. And so we really wanted to optimize his care. So we began researching, and that's how we found exclusive enteral nutrition. And he was willing to try it. And so, you know, that's where our story really begins in terms of using evidence-based nutrition alongside medications from the very start and from the very beginning. And we really feel like, just like everyone else, it's certainly been a very long journey and not an easy one by any means. It's been a little over 10 years. He was just before his 13th birthday, and he's 24 now. But he's really just come a very long way. And we've been really working hard to optimize his care by using combination of evidence-based nutrition and medication side by side. And just watching him over the course of time really begin to be able to function a little more optimally, or I should say optimally, and do a lot of things in life that maybe sometimes I didn't really even expect for him with his diagnosis, that he's able to do anything that he might enjoy doing, whether it's going to school or, you know, ran a marathon last year on the rocky plains of the Pacific Northwest. And my husband and I felt that as healthcare professionals that we really wanted to be able to share this, you know, with other patients, with other families, and with other clinicians, with healthcare providers, you know, that all of the evidence of nutrition as it evolves so that more could benefit by using it in combination to improve the long-term outcomes of this condition, because it's certainly very difficult and food is essential. It's a very big part of the pathogenesis and the process of it. And really, I think just seeing how he responded so quickly within the first few weeks of using, when he started exclusive mental nutrition, it really was a big eye-opener to us that something is really happening in there and that there's some, you know, part of nutrition that is therapeutic.
I'd love to stick with EEN for a little while longer. Can you talk a little bit about how that was introduced to you? Because obviously as healthcare professionals, you probably have slightly different conversations than folks that are really having to start kind of from square one with understanding the disease. But I'm curious how your son's doctor introduced this concept and brought it up, or did you bring it to the doctor? And then can you walk us through a little bit about what that was like for you guys to introduce it, and for your son at such a kind of pivotal age to use this as a therapy? Because it's not easy, I would imagine, especially when you're around people who are eating.
It's really good to discuss, because exclusive mental nutrition is really the cornerstone of nutritional therapy. It's the foundation upon which all other aspects of nutrition, you know, as part of therapy or treatment is really built upon. But it's certainly not for everyone, because it's difficult to do, you know, to have liquid nutrition only. That's what it means for exclusive mental nutrition or EEN, and to have that for, you know, 8 weeks is really the part to induce remission in Crohn's disease. But it's really the most well studied in pediatric Crohn's disease, but it also has increasing data, especially in the last few years, for adults. And really a lot of great data also for patients, you know, pre-surgery. So I think it's really an underutilized treatment or therapeutic option. And so as part of what we do as a nonprofit with nutritional therapy for IBD is to really promote awareness of all evidence-based nutritional options. And only just one of them is exclusive mental nutrition. That it's underutilized in the United States, for example. It's used less than 4% of the time here in the U.S., but yet it is the number one recommended treatment for induction of Crohn's disease worldwide in Canada, Australia, Japan. And a lot of the reason it's not used so much here in the U.S. or even offered is it's really perceived from the beginning that it's simply too difficult to do. So we really brought it to our doctors and really said that, hey, you know, it looks like this is Crohn's disease, and we really, you know, we would like to use this as part of his process of induction of remission, because, you know, in talking with our son, he's willing to do it. He had already, I think he was a great fit for it, because he was a self-proclaimed pescatarian since the age of 5, you know, and had really done that on his own. So, you know, he was really a person who was very disciplined and very kind of stuck to his own ways of doing things. And so when he said he could do that, we thought, well, okay, it does have among the highest rates of inducing remission and providing mucosal healing. So we thought that it was a good fit. But again, at the same time, we wanted to optimize everything. So we offered and had medications really also from the very beginning. But, and that was one reason why over the course of time, we've started nutritional therapy for IBD in 2019. It was founded, but we felt like, you know, because we had to really bring that up really in our setting, that it's nutrition in all the forms of evidence-based nutrition, it really needs a champion. And we felt a personal obligation as healthcare providers to help be that champion and to help be that voice for nutrition as part of care. But I'm not sure I fully answered your question, because I will say that it's certainly not easy, right? You know, because you're having liquid food only, but we really supported him as a family, right? You know, like sometimes we would all just have shakes together, you know, certainly not all the time, but we would do things like that to help support him. And I think it was heartbreaking for me for him to have his 13th birthday and he's on liquid nutrition only, right? But I can remember that he spent the day with a friend and really likes wooden boats. And so we went to like a wooden boat show and walked around and looked at that. And so it's like, it can often be about doing other things at that time. And I know someone that you've had on the show before, a teammate of ours, Nicole Pavlin, is currently using exclusive animal nutrition. And, you know, she shares with us too, that really focusing, and like she made it through the holidays, you know, for example, even on exclusive animal nutrition, but about doing other things and really making it more about spending special times together and not taking some of the focus off of the food. And a great article that was published last year was out of New Zealand, and Professor Day is one of our medical advisors there. And I thought it was really nice that it had a lot of the kids and the families' perspectives in that. And that's what they were really asking for, was really support from their friends, support from their families, and support from their healthcare providers, that really, while they're on this treatment, that they should still be seen regularly. They should be encouraged. And I think a lot of the way to have success with it is really a positive introduction from healthcare providers to say, you know, hey, that this is a treatment, it could really work for you. But absolutely to never force it on anyone, you know, because especially for kids, you know, that would be devastating if that's not something you're interested or want to do. No one should ever feel like they have to do that, right?
Yeah, definitely agree. I think because it is such a lifestyle change, I do think, you know, you have to be bought in as a family for all of it. But I agree with you. I think, you know, we've talked about this in the past of, you know, here in the United States, or from, I think everybody, everywhere, like celebrations or recognitions do a lot of times are tied to a meal, food, right? You know, birthdays or birthday cake, and the holidays, all these things are sort of have a very meal component. And so it does, you do have to have everybody kind of bought into it for sure. One of the things that has come up for, you know, advocacy issues for the IBD community is the access to medical nutrition. So there's an act going around about, like, you know, access, having insurance cover medical nutrition. And so I am curious. And one of the things that come out of that is that specifically, if you're getting your nutrition through a tube, then your insurance, that intervention is more likely to be covered by your insurance. But if you're drinking things as part of your, like, that is not as covered. I'm curious if this is that something that you've, as you've been hearing from families and talking to people about this, that you've experienced or heard about?
Oh, yes. That's the Medical Nutrition Equity Act. And we, Nutritional Therapy for IBD, is an organization that is co-signed as a supporter, you know, on that, you know, to support advocacy for legislation to help to pay for that. The Health and Medicine Council, that we're also a member of that and have regular monthly meetings. And that particular bill should be reintroduced soon. And there's been a little bit of language change, you know, in particular, you know, I don't know if it will stay in there, but in particular for Crohn's disease, because it's, you know, it's a really recognized therapy for that. And I think when you view it in that way, that it certainly just makes a lot of sense that that should also be, you know, included and supported by, you know, by insurance in every way that we support other treatment modalities.
Right. I mean, it certainly seems like barbaric to make it so that it's only covered if there's a tube involved. Because for, as we know from some of our past guests, that tube can be very traumatic for some folks. And also just thinking about, like, you know, if you're a 13-year-old boy walking around with a tube, you know, inserted could also be sort of socially awkward. So there's a lot at stake here where, you know, if this is a therapy that can be done in a different way, it's still and still effective. And, you know, being able to have that covered by insurance is super important. So thank you. I kind of assumed that was together, but that's helpful. Yeah. The other thing that has come up in some of our conversations with dietitians and mental health professionals is, you know, when you are so symptomatic, food is scary. And so if you go to a liquid diet that then puts you in remission, you're feeling so much better, things are going great. I would assume that there is some reticence and potentially even some fear in reintroducing foods, because, you know, before you went through all of these, you know, 8 weeks of enteral nutrition, you were feeling pretty crappy. So I'm curious, again, like, as you've been working with families or even your own son, what was that process like? Or what have you heard from folks about that process of kind of bringing food back in after the remission has come about based on the enteral nutrition.
Yes. And you know, in our nonprofit, just to clarify, nutritional therapy for IBD, we don't provide any direct services or medical advice to patients or families. That we really provide information, you know, both to the healthcare professionals and to patients. And we provide resources, you know, really to help make that easier. And so ideally, if you have a healthcare professional that's really trained, you know, in IBD and nutrition and IBD, and like a dietitian that might have special training in IBD, would really be ideal to work hand in hand and one-on-one to help work through some of these anxieties and food fears. And they're really real. I think that that's really an underappreciated aspect of living with IBD, is that, you know, patients do not feel supported or understood in terms of the concerns and the fears that they have around food. And I mean, and it's not just with exclusive enteral nutrition. It's really with, you know, if you've had flares and you've been, what patients experience is that they do experience when eating, sometimes they do experience symptoms. And so that's real to them. And so these fears that they have are also real. And so I think that, you know, that's something that our organization hopes to do, is to really normalize that and recognize the challenges that patients and families face when eating with IBD, and to normalize the fact that patients do have specific dietary needs, and that we need to really work with those patients and really support them through that. And so that they can feel comfortable and not even more isolated by being told, well, you don't really have to make any changes because there's no specific guideline for you. So just don't worry about it, or just eat anything you want. That's what a lot of, you know, gastroenterologists will say, but that's not how patients really recognize it. That's not what patients experience on a day-to-day basis. But I do think that, you know, in our case, it wasn't so difficult to transition. I think because we were really kind of preparing ourselves and saying, wow, this is really amazing that, you know, he's had such a good response in terms of the course of the 8 weeks and normalizing his inflammatory markers and just really feeling energetic again, able to go out and do things with friends and enjoy things that, and when you haven't eaten in so long, just even eating sort of kind of partially coming off exclusive, maybe going partial enteral nutrition and partial food, and maybe beginning with like some soft cooked vegetables and some salmon and things like that, that are really recognized to be like anti-inflammatory foods. That was really how our approach began. And so we wanted to transition to what we thought would be really more or less an anti-inflammatory based diet. And then interesting that in January of 2014, that's when Dr. David Seskin first published his first article, you know, on 7 kids with specific carbohydrate diet. And I contacted him back then because I thought, well, this is interesting because we've done exclusive enteral nutrition and we've been really, you know, picking and choosing, you know, anti-inflammatory based foods and have really been using this approach in our son who was age 13. And, you know, we've been friends really ever since that time. And so I think it just makes a lot of sense that if you're going to go through exclusive enteral nutrition, that maybe you do transition in a way that is thoughtful and maybe anti-inflammatory based, even if we might not have a specific named approach for you, because there's more than one right way to do it, but that you might have more success. It's logical, because what we do know is if you come off of exclusive enteral nutrition and you just go back to eating regular standard Western diet, what the data has shown is that the inflammation comes back rapidly. And so, and I think that's might be one of the reasons why exclusive enteral nutrition might have been underutilized as an induction therapy, because what do you do afterwards, or how do you transition? And I thought it was even interesting that, you know, one of the papers from Australia recently this year suggested that, well, you know, maybe it does make sense to transition if you go through EEN to an anti-inflammatory diet, even though we don't have like a specific study on that. It might be a logical approach, you know, for CDED or perhaps SCD. Again, only if this is something that the patient is interested to do, and especially when it's a child. It really, you can't emphasize enough that it's always the patient's choice. It's never, you have to really be careful with parents, because sometimes what the parents want can be a very different thing than what the child really wants. And the whole psychosocial issues, that you're not helping anyone if you're really forcing something on them that they're not interested to do, you know. And even just if you make small changes, that can still make a difference for that person. And so they shouldn't feel obligated in any way to take these higher levels of nutritional therapy options. But for those that are interested, you know, as an organization, we feel like they should be offered, right? And that every patient working together with their healthcare providers should have a patient-centric approach of really finding the option that's best suited for them.
One of the resources on the website, Nutritional Therapy for IBD's website, is an overview of all of these diets. It's one of my favorite things on the website. I've gone there a couple of times to check it out myself. But just since we were talking about that, I felt like it's a good time to mention it because it is a very valuable resource. I feel like there isn't a good resource like this for patients. It feels comprehensive, but I really do love this chart that you have that really compares and contrasts all of these diets to give you a lot more information all in one setting where you can just look at your screen and have all of the information right there in front of you where you can make informed decisions.
Thank you, Robin, for really mentioning that. It's actually a favorite resource of mine also. And I really think that we've talked about this with our medical advisors that we might should really publish this chart because it was really probably took the better part of a year to put these charts together because a lot of thought and a lot of care went into them. And that, to my knowledge, it's the only source of a vetted comparison, you know, between each of these therapeutic diets. And they're vetted by the primary researchers of each of those diets. And not only for the accuracy of the information that's included on the chart, but for the way that it's presented. For example, like CDED, the foods that are included in the first 12 weeks are different than what you have in, you know, the maintenance phase, which is more expansive. And that's why we have actually two columns, you know, for CDED, is because you need to know what is in each phase. But another thing that I really like about looking, and we've tried to sort of color code it with like green, where they're all really like the same and they agree, yellow, where there's differences, they green of what they include, yellow, where there's differences, and red, where these are things that they either all limit or exclude. And so I think from a research type of perspective, it starts to give us a little bit more clues when you collectively put these studies side by side. What is there a trend here or is there a channel? And you can really see it a little bit more. And there's some ongoing research now, for example, like the CD Treat trial out of Glasgow, which we don't actually have the dietary components of that yet. But, you know, the preliminary data, it looked very good. We do know that it's gluten-free is one of the aspects because that was shown to improve the efficacy of it. But as that research becomes completed and available, we will also put it into this comparison chart. And we think it's really going to advance our knowledge and maybe even inform future research by taking a look at that. And also like the Tasty and Healthy trial that's going on now with Dr. Dan Turner and others in Israel, it has some similar components to these diets. And we feel like, you know, maybe there's a trend and it really it can help us a little bit more. But if I may, I would also like to say that, you know, I think an advantage of having primary researchers that are working with us as medical advisors, as part of our organization, we have 18 international medical advisors, pediatric and adult gastroenterologists, dietitians, and a nurse practitioner, Kaylee Nguyen from Stanford, also. But they've all been primary researchers on any of these dietary therapies or even exclusive mental nutrition. And by bringing them together in one place and having routine, regular meetings and conversations together, I think it's really help to reduce what I would call sometimes the diet wars, where people have, you know, well, it's my diet and everybody's put in a lot of research. We're, for example, working together to make this chart, it takes away some of that and we can really focus more on what the components are. And I think that will really help advance dietary therapy as a whole.
Which is what all of the patients want, right? That's the question that everyone is asking is, what can I eat? What is going to help me to feel better? What is going to get me to remission? I do want to just say to everyone who just listened to Kim talk, don't be scared about all the research that she mentioned. The chart is very reader friendly and you can pull it up and look at it and immediately understand it. You do not have to have a medical degree or a PhD or be a researcher to understand it, because I immediately pulled it up and could read it. So you will also be able to immediately pull it up and read it and understand and be able to compare and contrast and get questions answered by looking at the chart. No advanced degrees necessary.
Well, I love that. And sometimes I'm guilty of wanting to give you more information that's really necessary to understand. I'm always very guilty of that. I think it's because I really love the research and the nutritional science that supports it. And I guess I want people to really feel the enthusiasm that I do, that we're moving forward and that this research is really helping us. But I would like to say that just having you tell me your assessment of the chart is so valuable, Robin, and that I really we hope to hear from even more patients who might come and visit our website, and things that we want to continue to strive to improve and to create helpful tools and helpful resources that help patients and that help healthcare providers, so that we can use evidence-based nutrition in any manner. There's more than one right way to do this. And there's partial enteral nutrition. There's exclusive enteral nutrition. There's Mediterranean diet, these therapeutic diets, and even just, you know, some basic healthy eating steps. So again, I hope I'm not overwhelming with more information than is really asked, but I just want to leave people understanding that. And that's why in some ways we call it something for everyone. And it's about meeting people where they are, because, you know, some people are going to be all in and they really want to do, you know, one of these therapeutic diets, and other people are just might stick a toe in and say, I'm going to make one change, and they're all good. And I really want people to realize that they need to be kind to themselves and gentle with themselves in this space, because I think that a lot of times when people try dietary therapy or lifestyle changes, we're all guilty of this. We want to really beat ourselves up, you know, oh, well, I was going to do this and then I slipped, and then, or maybe I ate that and it wasn't on the list or what have you. And I think that is just, it's really self-defeating. And I think we just really need to appreciate every small step along the way and never let, you know, perfect, you know, be the goal and stand in the way of good, you know.
One of the reasons that I know I'm going to just belabor this chart, but one of the reasons I like it is because I feel like IBD patients, we talk to each other, we do look stuff up on the internet incessantly. But if someone's like, oh, I tried this diet, it worked for me, I felt better, you should try it too, or I eliminated these foods or whatever, you know that those things, those conversations are happening, especially with newly diagnosed patients, they're going around. And so someone would have in their brain, I'm going to do this one thing. I'm going to try this one diet. I'm going to do this one thing. And if they go to your website and pull up the comparison, it's all of these options in front of them at one time. And so it removes the tunnel vision and shows them that there's more than one way to approach this. There's more than one thing that they have to do. And then they won't end up doing what a lot of us do, what I did for over a year, eat rice and chicken and avocado and nothing else, right? So the resources that you're providing are going to help so, so many people. And I can't wait to watch as this develops even more.
Oh, thank you, Robin. I must say that speaking to people like you all are truly so inspiring. And I think that's what keeps me here and really all of our team members who are working really very hard as all volunteers, is that's the bottom line at the end of the day, is we really want to make a difference for other people. And we want to reach back and help the people that are in that spot that we were in before. And we wanted to have more information. And we want to make the journey just a little bit easier, right, for each other. And that's why you all do what you do, is to help. We want to help make the journey for easier for those coming behind us.
For sure. Well, and we will make sure we link to this chart on our show notes as well. So if you're looking directly for it, it will be in the show notes. So look for it there. But I love that. I think it's going to help demystify a lot of this. But I do want to rewind us back a little bit, though, because you've introduced your organization. You've said a couple of things that you do, but I want to give you the chance to give us kind of your elevator speech pitch about your organization. So how did it get started? And then what are some additional tools and resources? Because you have this great chart, you have additional education pieces in there, but give us exactly what people should know about your website and your cause.
Okay. Thank you for that, Alicia, that we are nutritional therapy for IBD, that my husband and I are. Our founders started in 2019, and we have 18 international medical advisors working with us. So all of our content is vetted, that we are comprehensive, like Robin had mentioned, and up to date, you know, source of information. And it's a tool really for healthcare providers and for patients. And it's our goal to inform about nutritional science as it evolves in the same manner that we use pharmaceutical data. It's always evolving. There's always a new study. There's always a new piece of information. And we feel that if we can inform both healthcare providers and patients, again, as it evolves, then it can be applied right alongside medications as it evolves. We may not have all the answers, and we probably never will, because we're going to continue to layer in the research. But that doesn't mean that we wait and that we do nothing. We really should use what we have currently available today. And we advocate for facilitating and providing the information for healthcare providers and patients to work together and to facilitate these discussions between them so that they can find the right evidence-based option that's best suited to them. Like we said, there's a full array of options. It's anywhere from just knowing that that nutrition exists and that it's part of the pathogenesis, and to simple one or two steps to Mediterranean diet, to partial enteral nutrition. That's something that's completely underutilized if you don't change your diet at all, but you just have 50% of your calories or more in liquid nutrition. There are some really, you know, some data that shows reducing significantly surgical recurrence. And we feel like patients would like to know these things, and then they can decide really what works best for them in their lifestyles, or whether it's a therapeutic diet. So that's what we're about. And we're keeping up with the latest news. We're providing the highlights from the recent conferences like Crohn's and Colitis Congress. We're going to the European Crohn's and Colitis Conference next week in Stockholm. It'll be our first time there. And we will be really reporting on social media and in our newsletter. So if you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, we'd like to ask you to subscribe, because it's going to come out monthly now and really be just chock full of what is the latest information so that patients can really use it and apply it and really benefit today. That's our goal, is to help patients benefit from the knowledge and information that we currently have today. And additional resources, I think I forgot to mention, I mean, we have our recipe database that we developed last year, and that's under the patients and family section. It has over 1,000 recipes, and they're filterable, you know, so you can filter, you know, according to foods you might want to include or exclude, and they're vetted by our dietitians. And I know there's probably some really great cooks out there and people that have been, you know, making a lot of things. If you'd like to contribute a recipe to us, we would love to have that. And we'll have our dietitian team look at that and categorize it if it does fit within, you know, one of the evidence-based categories. But that can be anywhere from Mediterranean diet to therapeutic diet. So it's really, there's a lot out there. So, you know, we need your help. That's another thing that I'd like to ask, is that I think that it's something that I think we're all looking for, is to have diet part of the conversation from the very beginning. And we feel like if we can really engage more patients and more families to help us on this journey and to really raise the voice of nutrition as part of care, it will really help us. So I'm asking you maybe in some way to help us on our journey, you know, whether that's by just sharing awareness of our organization, its tools and resources, subscribing to our newsletter. They're all helpful to us to get the message out and to help us advance in our mission.
So, I mean, one of the things I love is that it's not just patient focused, it's also provider focused. Because I do think one of the things that we see perhaps providers struggle with is that it's difficult to keep up with the research, especially if this isn't exclusively what you're doing. If you're not an IBD specialist working within an IBD center, it's difficult to keep up with all the research because you're also having to sort of see patients with other types of diseases. And I do think things like nutrition, diet, and mental health tend to be the things that they kind of go, yeah, I don't know enough about that to be able to advise you. So I love that this is you offering this information and this resource to providers as well, so they don't have to be the expert on it. They can say, hey, I'm getting information here. I have got enough information to be able to kind of guide you to find out what you need to find out. So I love that. I'm curious, what is this response that you're hearing? So as you're going out to these different congresses and international meetings, what's the feedback you're getting from professionals about it?
You know, that is really rewarding and motivating, because a lot of people, like at the Crohn's and Colitis Congress that Yeah, they really came by, especially just to tell us thank you, you know, that, you know, people that I haven't met before, you know, that are using our resources and tell us that they're really helpful and that this has been so needed and that we're really filling an essential gap here. And so I know we're all out here working very hard. Our team members, our medical advisors are, and it's just really nice to know that they're used and appreciated. And, you know, I went into one of the nutrition sessions and someone that has just completed the Cedars-Sinai diet course was telling other people at the table that the very best resources come from nutritional therapy for IBD, you know, once they get out, because even once you get out of training, you still need more tools and resources. And we're not done, because this is always evolving. It's new, and we want to continue to build new tools that I forgot to mention that we're currently working on, and we hope to have it up by this spring. And we really want to engage more healthcare professionals and more dietitians in practice to help us to test this out. But it's sort of a new tool for healthcare providers about how to engage with patients when talking about nutrition, because like you said, I think a lot of them aren't really comfortable with that. And you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to know everything. But just we've tried to put that on the website, like having some of our medical advisors giving their elevator pitches, right, for why nutrition is important. So it can be a time-saving tool. So doctors can have their patients come and listen to what some of the experts are telling their patients. But really beyond that, there's just a lot of nuances in terms of determining how to help patients find the best fit. And that's actually something that healthcare providers have told us that, you know, over the years since we've started in 2019, that we believe you now nutrition is important, but tell us how, you know, how can we really integrate it, you know, into practice? And of course, you know, having someone trained in nutrition as part of your practice is really an essential part of that. But patients need to hear it directly from their doctors that it's important and that it's an integral part of their care, and take steps, you know, to talk with them and find out what interests them, right? And what support they have and how they feel about diet and what changes they might be interested in making, if any, right? And so we just want to help facilitate that conversation. And we're really hoping that our new tool that some of our medical advisors have helped to design, that it can make a difference to make a bigger space for nutrition as a foundational part and a conversation that's had in the very beginning.
Yeah, I think that's so necessary. I think so many people will really, really appreciate having that shortcut, for lack of better words, that they don't have to be the ones to necessarily engage, or that, you know, they have the tools to make it a very different conversation. So I think that's super cool. And I love that you're inviting people to contribute recipes, because I think you're right. There's a lot of people that are very creative out there that probably are doing some really cool stuff with some of these diets and coming up with some really amazing recipes to share. So that's I love that. That's really cool. The guest that was on the show last week, Jordan McConnell. He has created an AI tool that searches through diets and recipes so that you can kind of take a picture of your fridge or put information in, and it like helps you put together a shopping list and a recipe that's helps your diet. So as I was thinking, I'm like, you guys need to maybe connect, because he might be able to help you.
Well, I'm smiling, Alicia, because he contacted us, and I was going to say that we want to hear from you all how we can improve. But I think he overwhelmed Victorine and I, because we're not technology type people. Some of our other teammates are, and he sees ways that, because, you know, we have so much evidence-based information, and, you know, he sees how we can really advance to provide even new tools and resources. So we're planning to maybe reconnect with him, because we have to advance this new tool that we've started on, you know, and haven't, you know. And so I was telling him that we're excited, but we don't want to get too much ahead of ourselves. But it might be interesting to see. I don't have a good understanding of exactly what that could do. But he has great vision. I think that's really interesting to what a small world this is.
Yeah. I mean, because we got I said, you know, my question to him was like, you're a tech guy, like with all of this like AI stuff coming out, like what do you see as what's the influence that that's going to have? And he said that he basically had used AI to write a code essentially so that he could be able to use it to say, okay, like what can I do with these things and help you come up. And it's even so much that you can help you come up with a shopping list that then puts it into your Instacart that then buys it for you, kind of thing. And I was like, My mind is completely blown. So you, I mean, listen, I'm way too old for that to have been probably what it really was that he said, but I do think he's got some really unique ideas. And one of them is very, very, very specific around like, how do I make sure that I'm eating the right things if I'm following this diet or, you know, to make sure that I'm keeping myself as healthy as possible. So I was like, listen, you guys at least need to chit chat.
I am so mad at myself that I did not even think of that.
Well, you were on the show with me, though. I had to have a guest.
I wasn't on the show with you, but that is brilliant. That is a brilliant use of AI.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of nefarious things you can do with AI, I'm sure. But yeah, so I'm excited that he's talking to you guys already because I think there could be some synergy.
Yeah, well, and I think that's the wonderful thing is that we all come from the same place, you know, that we really want to help one another. We want to help other patients. And we know that nutrition and food is really an essential part of life. And it can encompass every aspect of your life if you have IBD. And we really want to help patients get to a better place where they can actually really enjoy more foods and with more healing. That's what we've really experienced. That's what our medical advisors have experienced also in treating patients, that as they heal, they can eat a wider variety of foods. They can really enjoy food again. And that's our goal, is to have patients be able to eat as broad a diet as possible and to really feel well and to function well and to live their life as best they can and optimally. And so that it's not all encompassed by IBD.
I just look at that and think how much of a kind of emotional boon that would be for folks as well. Like I think about, you know, Nicole in her episode talked very candidly about being afraid of eating and about how that's so common from folks that we're talking to, like to have the data to be able to say, like, I trust that what I'm choosing to do, I'm trust by introducing these things or introducing this diet is going to not be something that's detrimental to me. I think that's really like people want that reassurance that they're sort of making the right choice. I feel like, you know, in all things.
Yes. And Barbara Olensky made a video for us on the website. And I think that's under a section we have like focus on variety. And, you know, it's really compelling. And I know another one of our team members said she was just really moved by it because she also had fear of food. But Barbara, she's the founder of the IBD Aid Diet, Barbara Olensky from UMass, if for those who may not know her, and one of our medical advisors. But in her experience, what she said is that she felt that as patients found safe foods where they could slowly introduce, like you're talking about, that they soft cooked vegetables and maybe in stages, because when you're really hurting and in pain, it really makes sense that you're going to experience symptoms and that is going to make you afraid. But over time, they could eat foods and not experience those symptoms. And that was really key to advancing to the next steps that, okay, I can eat these foods and I feel good. I don't feel anything. So now I'm ready to keep advancing. And that, you know, we want people to eat as many varieties of fruits and vegetables as possible, because we, you know, for example, we know the gut microbiome is really a key player in the pathogenesis of IBD. And the American Gut Project a number of years ago had found that people who ate 30 or more varieties of fruits and vegetables per week had a more diverse microbiome. So I think it's kind of interesting, and it can even be fun, you know, to say, okay, I'm going to have a new fruit, or I'm having a new vegetable, or I've never seen this, you know, before, and let me try and add that. But it all needs to be done in a safe way. That's for people who are more advanced. But when you're early on and you're scared and you're afraid, that's not where you are. You need to have a few things, and it needs to be cooked. It might need to be soft. It might need to be pureed or in the blender, but baby steps, if you will, and get some healing and comfort behind the food. And it just, what Barbara's approach really makes a lot of sense to me, that's what I would choose, you know, in that spot. And I'm hoping that, you know, dietitians and other healthcare providers can really work with these patients and really help them in a way, side by side, to hold their hand, if you will, to really walk through some of these scary times together, because patients really need it. They're out there and they're hurting, and a lot of them are alone. And we want to do as much as we can as an organization to help support them.
I love that. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And now I'm definitely trying to count all of the vegetables I've had this week, because I was like, I don't think I eat 30 varieties of And I don't have Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. I'm like, sheesh, I better work. I'm going to work on this. I'm going to just branch out a little bit.
Well, and I think, you know, and a lot of people think, oh, well, you know, it ends up being restrictive if you have that. But if you look at the channels like that Robin's talking about, this chart, most fruits and vegetables are included, right? And I think that, you know, I discovered, you know, with changing the way that I cook that I cook lots of vegetables now. I don't, you know, I don't just have like maybe one for dinner. I like to have several. My mother, she laughs at me sometimes. She's like, you have way too many vegetables. I think it's nice to have variety, but you can cook them. And then sometimes you can get out and have the leftovers you had the night before, right? Because that gives you, and then just cook one new one and you throw it in there. So then you still have several different cooked vegetables. But I found, you know, different things that I didn't eat before, like persimmons, right? You know, that it's a kind of fruit, and kumquats. You know, I even grow them now, and you can just eat them off the little tree. But again, these aren't for people that are really hurting in the beginning. I really want to be aware of that, because it's a bad feeling when, you know, when you're not feeling well and someone's telling you to go and eat, you know, all of these things, and you so wish you could, but, you know, maybe instead of apples, you have applesauce, because applesauce, it's what's, I just love the nutritional science, but actually when you cook apples and you break it down, it actually releases more pectin out of it. And the pectin has actually been shown to increase the integrity of the intestinal lining, you know, the pectin has. And so all these little things, that there could be something in the food science. It's the way that it's prepared and it's made, because you're making it more digestible, for example, also when you're soft cooking the vegetables. So, you know, it just makes a lot of sense. But I'm hoping eventually that more people can get to having, you know, wider varieties of new fruits and vegetables that maybe you didn't even know existed before, like, you know, different kinds of squash and acorn squash and zucchini squash. And it can be fun too. It doesn't have to be boring. And then herbs too. Like, you know, I believe me, I really didn't cook a lot before, but now I cook a lot and I find it to be not difficult. You know what I mean? It's still some work, granted, but, you know, if you cook extras, right, then you can have some the night before. So it can only be a couple nights a week. But when you put fresh herbs and things, and even having your own herbs outside, growing them in a garden or a box, it can be really rewarding just to go out and clip them and then, you know, throw them in the vegetables. And not only do the flavors come out, but really like polyphenols and the phytonutrients that, and even the antibacterial properties, like rosemary, you know, rosemary extract is commonly used as a natural preservative, you know, in some products. And, you know, just throwing your rosemary in like with Brussels sprouts and sage that you roast, it really adds a lot of flavor, and it can be fun. I don't know. Maybe I'm just hit a different place or a different stride when I've been in here now 10 years. It's hard at the beginning. I definitely say it will. You're going to feel like a fish out of water when you're first like, oh my gosh, I'm used to buying things that are so easy to prepare, you know, and they're in boxes and what have you. But when you start making changes and you start cooking things a little more fresh, you're like, well, you know what? Maybe I'm not so bad at cooking it. It's not so hard, right? And it tastes good.
And whenever you're introducing new stuff, you know, I have to get back on my little soapbox. When you're introducing new stuff, sometimes you have to, and Stacey will, I hear Stacey Collins, everyone, friend of the show, Stacey Collins, yes. I just hear her. She's the little angel on my shoulder whispering in my ear, introducing things slowly, a little bit at a time, especially when you're doing fruits and vegetables, if you haven't had them for a while, if you're post-op or anything like that, or if you're newly into remission, slowly start small. Not everything's going to agree with you at first. And just because it doesn't agree with you at first doesn't mean it's never going to agree with you. This is your body. I mean, it's like you're starting all over again. And so it does take your body time to readjust. This is your somebody speaking who, again, only ate chicken and rice and avocado for over a year. So it just takes time I marvel at the fact that I can eat oranges and strawberries and watermelon and all of these things now, and after not eating fruit for like 20 years. But I did have to start very slow, literally smoothies, but then like one stinking tiny blueberry at a time. So, and when I get excited and I have stir fry still, almost 3 years post-op, I sometimes regret stir fry because I get excited. I want all of these vegetables and I throw in like what Kim is describing sounds delicious. And I have chopped Brussels and zucchini and squash and all of these things in there. And then I eat the stir fry. And then later I'm like, I went too hard on the stir fry.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sometimes just know that just because it doesn't agree with you now doesn't mean it's not going to agree with you forever. And sometimes you go 20 years without having a strawberry. That happens too. This is IBD and that's how we live with it. So whatever your reality is with food, it's going to change. I just want you to know that it is going to change. I just want you to know that whatever it is, it is okay. But try not to restrict foods when you can. These diet resources are available for you on Nutritional Therapy for IBD's website. Work with a IBD trained dietitian if you are able to and have access to one. Food is joy. Food is life. Don't let the IBD get your food down.
Well, and maybe it's just a matter of like, you know, stir fry sounds amazing, but stir fry, the vegetables are still not super cooked. So it might be that you modify the recipe so that your vegetables are more cooked and you're putting the sauce, you know, kind of thing. So it might be that you have to take the concept and sort of tweak it a little bit until you're in a place where maybe stir fry is a little more acceptable.
I'm just saying.
That's a lot of vegetables, right?
Admittedly, everyone, I went overboard with the stir fry. I'm not going to lie. I was just really excited about stir fry. Every once in a while, I'm just amazed that I can eat all of these fruits and vegetables again. And so I'm like, I want all of the vegetables all at one time, get in my belly. And then I immediately regret it. It's okay. I live to tell the tale in pain, but I live. Kim, thank you so, so much for being on the show. We really appreciate you coming on and talking about all of the good work that Nutritional Therapy for IBD is doing. It is amazing, and we can't wait to see what is to come. But it's time for us to ask you the last question. So, what is the one thing that you want the IBD community to know?
Well, Robin, you did such a fantastic job of summing up, you know, how we want people to view nutrition and to take baby steps and to never give up and to always have hope in that, even if you're in a bad place now, that just working in a manner that's right for you and with your healthcare providers, just as you mentioned, that you can get to a better place and that it's possible to get to a place to enjoy food again and enjoy your life. And it's certainly not easy, and we don't want to diminish the struggle that's on the way, but we really want to leave people with a lot of hope that taking those baby steps can really go a long way to help move you to a different place. And I guess that's what we want to leave people with, is encouragement and to feel empowered, to have just more control of how they're feeling and where they're going with their life, and to enjoy food. Like you said, it should be joyful, and we want people to be hopeful that it can be again.
I'm curious if, as a mom of somebody living with inflammatory bowel disease, do you have any specific mom or parental advice that you would share on raising somebody with inflammatory bowel disease?
Well, I think it's important to be supportive, but not to let IBD rule your life or your relationship with your child. Because I think we're always worried about that, and it's always on the forefront of our mind, but you know, it's not what they always want to talk about or tell you about. And they are certainly more than that condition that we're, as parents or as mothers, we're always worried about. So really try to remember to help them feel just like a regular, normal kid growing up.
Great advice. Thank you.
Thank you. I love it so much.
Kim, it has been such a pleasure to have you on. We really, really appreciate it. And like Robin said, we're so excited for the work that you're doing and all of your fantastic volunteers and your medical advisory committee. I think it's so necessary for our community. So I think people are really going to take a lot away from this conversation, but also from all of the tools and resources on your website. So definitely go down to the show notes, guys. You can get direct links there so you can see it. But again, Kim, it is such a pleasure to have you on. Thank you everybody else for joining us as well. And cheers, guys.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers. And thank you again, Alicia and Robin. I enjoyed it so much and really appreciate it. Hi, this is Kim Bell. And if you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, subscribe, and share it with your friends.